Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon. And Ron?
I'm chuckling.
One word. One word. What would describe you? One word.
Courage.
Courage. I would say
courage.
Lockbox.
Yeah. No, I thought your tweet on this was wonderful. As soon as they said, think of one word to describe yourself, Ken tweeted,
lockbox.
Well, we're talking about the last, maybe the final Republican debate.
Last and maybe final.
Yeah, well, most recent.
Most
and
recent.
Perhaps and final.
Yes.
Of one of the best 20
One of the
debates.
Best 20.
But, you know, there was so much at stake because, one, we have not seen or heard from Newt Gingrich basically since South Carolina. Exactly, since South Carolina.
Hoot.
And then also, this is the first debate we've had where Rick Santorum is ostensibly the front runner based on these three contests on February 7th.
And what has that meant to all the other people who suddenly rose from the pack and became the alternative to Mitt Romney in the past? What has happened when they stepped out for their big moment in the spotlight?
They got crunched, and they got replaced by the next alternative to Mitt Romney.
Usually with a little interim of people going, oh, I guess it'll be Romney.
Yeah.
And they go back to Romney for a few weeks, somebody else emerges.
The I guess it would be Romney was what we call the Florida primary. Florida, Nevada, okay.
All right. Capitulation, right. I think they call that in market psychology.
And then came February 7th, and then we're back to the,
Trifecta Tuesday. Yeah. And maybe that was the beginning of the Rick Santorum era, and he is going to sweep on to the nomination, be elected in November, win a second term in 2016, and we will look back on this as the Santorum decade. But there's also the alternative scenario, which is that he will go down in something like, not exactly like, but in something like the way Gingrich did, Herman Cain did, except that was very heavy self-destruction, and Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann and so forth, that these people have all emerged, been tried and found wanting.
And yet, when all those people rose and fell, it was before the voters had any say in it. I mean, Michelle Bachmann never, aside from the meaningless Iowa straw poll,
which she barely won over Ron Paul.
Right, but you know, Rick Perry's best debate performance was, I think,
his
Wednesday
first,
night. No, Wednesday night.
Oh,
this
yes,
week.
You mean this week?
Yeah, this week.
This week when he sat next
audience.
To Callista Gingrich, and they seemed to be having a good time.
They were, well, No. But I think the big winner by
actually,
far.
They were comparing combs.
The big winner was.
Hairstylists.
The big winner, I thought, was Arlen Specter.
I thought this was Arlen Specter's moment to shine. After all these years, he finally had the opportunity to look and sound good in a presidential debate.
You know, every analysis I've read so far about Wednesday night's debate was that Mitt Romney was strong and solid, but some of the arguments just seemed out of nowhere. Just Arlen Specter? I understand that.
Well, but whose fault was Arlen Specter coming up? It was Romney's fault for bringing him up because he said, you supported Arlen Specter over a true conservative.
Socket Toomey.
Pat Toomey.
Oh, Socket.
Pat Socket Toomey. And, of course, Pat Toomey is now a United States senator and occupying the seat that had previously been Arlen Specter's seat. But way back in 2004, I believe was the year, Arlen Specter was running for re-election and Rick Santorum supported him over Pat Toomey, distressing all of the movement conservatives in Pennsylvania. But there were reasons for it, good reasons in Senate terms, why you would want to support your Senate colleague from the same party, from the same state. And he tried to lay some of those out last night. That was a trap. And Santorum fell straight into it.
But it seems like everything Santorum said in the Wednesday debate was almost a trap. When he was explaining why he was for earmarks, when he explained why he was for No Child Left Behind.
Ooh, especially the earmarks.
Oh, but all that stuff. He said, well, here's the way things work in Washington.
Oh.
And of course, Ron Paul loves to hear that.
Oh, sometimes you take one from the team?
Right, oh yeah.
Oh, is this not the opposite of what he's been telling us? He would be this wonderful outsider who would upset everything. He has essentially taken upon himself the label of the Washington insider, which, okay, let's face it, he's a former senator.
He's not
in
a Washington.
Some danger of that, but he was always an outsider
when he was in the Senate. And he was in the leadership. He was always an outsider.
He was terribly
far more
unpopular with his own colleagues, even on the Republican side, when he was a senator.
Didn't he threaten Mark Hatfield or something? Not physically threatened him.
Were ugly incidents on the floor of the Senate. Bob Byrd decided he was not a senator in Bob Byrd's wonderful pantheon what a senator must be. And he had a truly at odds with the institution career of 12 years in the Senate. And in many ways, he is more appropriate either running for governor or running for president than he would have been as a legislator. So for him to suddenly find himself getting balled up in all of these internal procedural explanations of what he was doing,
He felt like a former senator who was just, you know, happens to be in a presidential debate, and the thought of him as a national frontrunner, and yet polls show him still, I mean, who knows? Look, we have to see
the what polls are lagging indicator.
Yeah, always, always, especially national polls. I mean, let's see what happens, because we've seen Michigan tighten up. Santorum a week ago had
By tightening up, you mean Romney making
Romney
a comeback.
Moving up, yeah, yeah. I mean, Santorum seemed to have a double-digit lead a week ago, and now maybe that's gone away. I think Romney does win Michigan.
I think he wins Michigan.
Yeah, but wow, I mean.
But he, you know, he may win it so narrowly that he may not get the majority of delegates because they're apportioning them by congressional district, right. And he may not win most of the congressional districts. We'll have to see. But if he wins the popular vote in Michigan, that'll be the headline. It will be adding to his delegate total, whereas Santorum will be getting really his first meaningful delegates because what he's won up to now has been delegate-free. So I think if he just wins Michigan in the popular vote, at least that will, you know, prevent the disaster interpretation on February 28th, next Tuesday, and will set him up for a more successful March 6th, Super Tuesday, when the big question is Ohio.
Well, here's another question. If Newt Gingrich had a good debate, I think he had a good debate.
I don't know. He was okay. He seemed a little off balance to me.
Well,
he wasn't happy sitting down.
He wasn't the focus.
He wasn't the focus. And he looked a little odd, slumped over to one side. But he still got his shots in. He got in the shot against the media for protecting Barack Obama on the issue of late-term abortion in 2008.
Why do you ask social questions of the Republicans and not of the Democrats? Legitimate, in some ways, question.
Although those issues were discussed in the 2008 presidential primaries. But nonetheless, he has a point about the way the media treat, including us, the way we treat social issues. We treat them as something of a division between certain Democratic candidates, but as an albatross for Republicans.
Right.
We bring it up as something that's a big handicap for Republicans.
But I understand that, and I understand Gingrich's argument against the media, how they are covering those issues. But at the same time, you have to say, or maybe you don't have to say, but one would say, I would say, that I think that Santorum's rhetoric on religion, faith, is, if nothing else, is more conservative / extreme, whatever the word, than any Republican nominee for president in history. I mean, if you think of women's rights, if you think of women's serving in the military about contraception, I don't remember even Ronald Reagan, the pinnacle of...
He was careful not to make women feel singled out for some kind of return to the traditional role.
And even if he did have a gender gap in 1984, and he did, of course, with Geraldine Ferraro, he still got a majority of the female vote.
Oh, yeah. See, that when people talk about the gender gap in the Reagan years, he had a gender gap in 1984 because he got 56% of the women's vote. Not too shabby, but he got 62% of the male vote. That's the only
I love the fact that Ronald Reagan had a gender gap, not Walter Mondale. I mean, it was Ronald Reagan. But I think Rick Santorum will have a problem.
Oh, no, wait a minute. We're not talking about 6 points with Santorum.
No.
That's the difference. Reagan was doing very well among women and fantastically among men. What we're talking about with Santorum is the possibility that you would see, and this is obviously highly speculative, but if John McCain with Sarah Palin, the first woman on a Republican ticket, only got to 43% of the women's vote in 2008, what happens if you put out a guy like Rick Santorum, who's got some real issues with women and who doesn't necessarily have a woman as his vice presidential candidate? Of course, he could choose one, but if he doesn't, how does he get to 43?
No.
I don't see it.
No.
If he doesn't get at least 40, well, let's say he's almost Reagan-esque and getting 60% of the male vote, which I would never predict.
Nope.
I don't think anyone will ever do that. But if he did, he would still lose because 60% of women is more than 60% of men. Women vote more often than men. 8 million more votes almost in 2008.
Well, one candidate who does very well with women, Newt Gingrich, the question is, what does he what does he do on Super Tuesday?
But you can't get elected president one woman at a time.
He's almost doing a Rudy Giuliani thing. I'm going to skip February 28th. I'm going to skip Arizona. I'm going to skip Michigan. I'm going to focus on Ohio, Georgia, Oklahoma, Tennessee. But
But bad news for Santorum, by the way, well, to have him focusing on state Santorum.
And every vote he takes away, every vote he gets, certainly comes out of Santorum's hide. But if he's not part of the dialogue, if he's not part of the conversation, at least coming out with the headlines coming out of February 28th, do voters suddenly on March 6th say, he's the guy we want? I mean, who knows?
Who knows? I do believe that while the media are, on one hand, exhausted with the campaign, they're also pushing to continue the campaign. There's no question but that this has been a great story for the television cable networks. The plurality of people in the country tell thoughtful, serious pollsters that they're getting most of their information, or the first place they look, or the dominant place they look for information about this campaign is cable television. That's Fox, it's CNN, it's MSNBC, it's some of the business channels. And this has been a great story for them. They don't want it to go away. It's not like we're trying to cut this thing off, and it's certainly not as though there aren't billionaires out there who want to give money. We just found out this week that a quarter of all the money given to the super PACs that are driving this campaign to a large degree, more than the parties, was given by five people.
Yeah.
Five people gave a quarter of all the money that's been given. And we're talking tens of millions of dollars here, and we're talking about people sitting around a table. They could sit around a table, and they wouldn't even need to get the circular booth in the corner of the restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, Adelson's talking about, I'll give $10 million to Gingrich, I'll give $100 million.
$100 million, he says. He might give that to Gingrich and to Romney.
Obviously, he's not a Santorum guy, but, you know, Ron, we're having this conversation. It seems like everything we're saying about the Republican field is, in some ways, negative about one candidate or the other. And look, there's always a theory that either a prolonged battle for the nomination, as we saw with Obama and Hillary Clinton in 2008, helped the ultimate nominee.
It helped Obama. I'm not sure it would have helped Hillary that much if she had prevailed, because it might have hurt her among African-American voters and some others.
True, but it certainly helped Obama. And then you could also make the case in 76 with Ford and Reagan that hurt the Republican Party.
Clearly weakened Gerald Ford.
In 80 with the Kennedy and Carter.
It clearly weakened Jimmy Carter.
So, but I don't remember everything being this vituperative. This is personal and this ugly. And you know that ultimately if the desire among the Republican Party is to beat President Obama.
And there's no question about that.
Right, but you could see the anger, well, not in this week's debate, but in the past, you saw how Newt Gingrich truly feels about Mitt Romney. You see the dismissive looks that Rick Santorum gives Romney. And yet, ultimately, if Romney's a nominee, and again, I still can't imagine it being anybody other than Romney, unless, you know, the Chris Christie, Mitch Daniels, Jeb Bush. CNN, for a full half hour prior to the debate on Wednesday night, they were talking about the brokered convention, how somebody new was going to get into the race. What's wrong?
I mean, well, as I was saying, this has been a great story for cable television news. It's been a great story for news operations in general. And there are a lot of people talking about the possibility that we go beyond the California primary in June, that we go beyond July, that we get all the way to August. Yes, and I have been a skeptic about whether or not there could ever be another brokered convention. But the Republicans have changed their rules enough this year with the proportional allocation of delegates.
Until April 1st.
Until April 1st, and then these big primaries coming up then, which permit the possibility of big shifts of big blocks of delegates late in the game, it's not inconceivable, certainly not mathematically, that something could happen to not bring some new person in. It's too late for that for the moment. What is possible is that we get to Tampa and no one has 1,144 delegates to be nominated, or perhaps even 1,100, or perhaps even 1,000. And if you've got a split between Gingrich and Santorum and Ron Paul and Mitt Romney and nobody has 1,144, you get there and the natural assumption is not anymore that whoever has the most will put together a package and get over 1144. It becomes almost the opposite.
If you look at the history of brokered conventions, it's usually the guy who goes into the convention with the most delegates usually loses.
That's
and
correct.
There's some coalition behind him getting the alternative. So, I mean, but
and
again,
that's where you get your Chris Christie breakthrough. That's where you get your Jeb Bush breakthrough. That's where you get your Mitch Daniels. Oh, but fill in the blank. Now, if you look at any one of those names individually, you can think of lots of reasons why that wouldn't happen or why it wouldn't be a good thing or why they might not want to accept it. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe Jeb Bush sees himself getting elected in 2016, and maybe he thinks his chances in 2016 are better than his chances in 2012. And maybe he's right. So
you won't have to run against an incumbent president in 2016.
And everyone knows you don't.
Democratic president.
Everyone knows you don't want to run against an incumbent president if you can possibly avoid it. And That's been our history. And most of these guys are pretty savvy, not only about this particular set of circumstances, but about the larger historical context.
I think, though, we're missing the big point, and that is Buddy Romer leaving the Republican race.
You know, it's all been build up for Buddy's moment.
Nature boy Buddy Romer.
And you know, I said to myself,
Ken,
if there's no place for Buddy Romer in the Republican Party, has the Republican Party just gotten too small?
Well, so he's gonna offer himself up as the candidate of the Americans elect this third force.
You almost called it a party. Are they a party?
No,
third
no,
party?
They are a force in nature.
They are a third way. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
And so he would like to glom onto all these ballot positions they've been winning. Are they going to get on the ballot in all 50 states?
That's what it looks like. But, you know, it's
that's an impressive thing to do. It took Ross Perot months and months and tens of millions of dollars.
And George Wallace in 68 also got on all 50 ballots. But there, both with Ross Perot, with John Anderson, with George Wallace, there was a candidate. Here it's a movement in search of a candidate.
That's right.
Which is interesting. And I don't know if that works.
But it works if you have lots and lots of
money. And you also, again, Buddy Romer, who did not even make it enough in the polls to be included in the Republican candidate debates.
Not one.
No.
Not one. I believe Gary Johnson, the former governor
two,
of New Mexico,
yeah,
got into one or two.
Right, right.
Before he dropped out and said he was running for the Libertarian Party nomination.
So it's hard to imagine that all this effort, if there's dissatisfaction with President Obama and whoever the Republican nominee is going to be, Buddy Romer is not the kind of guy who will take advantage of that dissatisfaction.
On the other hand, he's been raising the issue of money in politics. He's been raising the issue of excessive amounts of money, buying influence and access.
And who pays attention to him? The media don't. And not voters.
But I'm not so sure that Americans Elect is not going to have an impact in the sense that a lot of people are going to get involved in this nominating process. People are going to sign up to be delegates. People are going to go online. They're going to take part.
Maybe.
All right, then if you aren't so sure that Americans Elect and Buddy Romer are going to be the big third option, do you see anyone else getting in this race in a meaningful way between now and November?
You're talking about major party candidates?
I'm talking about somebody who is not necessarily with a major party. Do you see somebody else, a third name besides, say, Obama and Romney, getting out there and being a significant, meaningful, substantive part of this contest?
I don't. I mean, you would think that maybe some Republican alternative, either somewhat of a moderate bent or somebody of a more libertarian bent, if Gary Johnson is the Libertarian nominee, or does Ron Paul? I don't know.
Ron Paul does not, to me, seem to be building towards a bolt the party third rail candidacy.
Especially if Rand Paul, his son, has future.
He says that doesn't matter to him, but he just doesn't seem to be building toward it.
Yeah, I mean,
to the naked eye.
And, you know, for all the dissatisfaction we're hearing among, you know, of the candidates, and you're hearing it more and more about Republicans, the question, I guess, that comes to me is that, look, Mitt Romney has to do and say everything he can to win the hearts and minds and votes of conservatives.
In Arizona, he said that their immigration law should be, quote, a model for the country. He said that last night. Do you think we'll see that tape again?
Well, yes, by President Obama.
Yes.
The question is, you know, you always heard about Richard Nixon saying you move to the right during the primaries, you move to the center during the general election, but he has moved well to the right because
he has to prove that
his aberrations of 1994 against Kennedy in 2002. One of the reasons I think Romney is saying so many conservative things is obviously he has to win over the minds and the hearts and the votes of the conservatives who don't trust him, given the fact that he said completely different things in 1994, 2002. How do you come back after doing everything you can to prove that you're a true conservative, really a red meat conservative? How do you come back in November or in the fall and say, look, I need to get the votes of these independent voters in
and
the middle?
That's not even his problem yet. His problem now is February 28th,
right.
Arizona and Michigan. Really needs to win Michigan, really needs to win Arizona too. And then we go on to Ohio on March 6th with 10 other states as well. A lot of mixed results likely to come that date. He hasn't closed the deal with Republicans yet. He hasn't even purchased the opportunity to start worrying about the problem that you mentioned. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Lockbox. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I